The following is a North Carolina Baptist resource. For more, visit ncbaptist.org.
We want to take full advantage of our time, and we appreciate you being here. My name is Lonnie Reynolds, and I serve you, the churches in North Carolina, in the area of revitalization. There were some other guys here, and I think they're going to another session now, who are contractors with us. They're pastors or church staff people who work with us. But I think they've stepped out, so I won't be introducing them. I did the last time. So we're glad you're here. And here's kind of the format we're going to do. You're not going to have a talking head. I'm not going to be up here talking to you. I have the three churches. Some of you here last night, you saw the video during Brian Upshaw's report to the convention. And these guys are going to share their story. We have Hope Community Church. That would be Jeremy Peeler. We have Jeff Marburger and Skip Allen. And then we'll hear from Devon Varnum, who's at Tar Heel Baptist Church. And then finally, on the back end is Nathan Klein, and he's at Revo Church in Winston-Salem. So what we're going to do, we're going to give them 7 minutes. All the Hope guys don't get 7 minutes each. There are three people talking, but they're going to have about two and a half minutes each. Share their stories. And then we're going to have a Q&A after that. But here's the thing. I would love for you to listen as you hear the stories. They're all different, and that's intentional. As you hear the stories, I want you to think about what are some common elements or common characteristics that we're hearing here. Not about them, but the part that God plays in this and what you hear as you hear them tell their God stories about what He's done in and through their churches. So without any more from me, Jeremy.
Hey guys, I want to share with you real quick from Luke chapter 5, and also I guess it's John chapter 21 as well. We see the same story with similar qualities in each of them. We get where Jesus is calling His disciples. In the first one, at the John chapter 21, it's at the end of His ministry after the resurrection. And the guys are out fishing. The disciples are out fishing. And they have fished all night long. And they've caught nothing. Jesus, in fact, comes up and walks up and He says, "Hey guys, have you caught any? Do you have any fish?" And they kind of have to look down and check their nets, and they realize there's nothing in them. And then Jesus says, "Hey, how about casting out on the other side of the boat? How about casting out into the deep? How about casting out into a place you haven't tried? Try something new." And you guys all know the story from Luke 5 and in John 21, that they caught so many fish that their nets were breaking, that they could not haul all of them in. And what I see in those stories is a lot of what I see that takes place in revitalization is for churches and individuals and congregation members and pastors to kind of come together and say, you know what, I need to listen to and listen for the voice of Jesus again. Because there's one common thread in both of those, is that they heard Jesus' voice. In Luke 5, it actually says that Peter looks at Jesus and says, "At thy word, I will do this." And that's what prompts him to go out and cast on the other side of the boat. So I think that that's something in revitalization that we need to do, is listen for the voice of Jesus. What is it that He is telling us? What is it that He's asking us to do? If we decide to do what Jesus tells us to do, that takes some ingredients. It takes one thing, and that is obedience. We have to do what Jesus said. If we've prayed and we've heard His voice and He says do something, as crazy as it might sound, we need to go ahead and do that. And when we do decide to obey Jesus, that's going to take a whole lot of courage. That's going to take us being willing to tell the guys that we've been in the boat with for a really long time, who've been working really hard with us. It's going to take looking over at them and saying, "We're going to do this again, but we're doing it differently. We're going to do something a little bit different." It's going to take also a great deal of sacrifice. It takes sacrifice to do what Jesus has asked you to do. It takes sacrifice of a lot of things, whether that's the way you thought about things, whether that's traditions, whether that's you got to give up this or that. It takes a lot of sacrifice in order to do what Jesus has called us to do. But at the end of the day, we know that it's going to reach a whole lot more people, right? It's going to reach a whole lot more people. The option for us is to just not do what Jesus asked us to do. And then that means that lost people don't come in. But if there's one thing that I have seen throughout the entire process of what happened with Hope Community and our merger, was the consistent thing was, did Jesus say, do this? And in all of the times that I had with our congregation, with Second Baptist, in the process of the merger, when they would ask me certain things, I would always say, guys, those are things that don't really matter. It's that Jesus said do this, and we got to do it. And that means we're going to have to sacrifice. That means we're going to have to give up a whole lot of stuff. That means, yeah, we're tired. We've been going at this for a really long time, but we've got to be re-energized to do this again. So I would just encourage you guys in your search for revitalization in your congregations, in your churches, is to listen for that voice of Jesus. But when he says do it, guys, do it. There's no other thing we can do, right? We can't fear what somebody else is going to say more than we fear what God is going to say to us for not doing it. And just want to encourage you in listening for his voice and doing what he says do.
Ooh. So if you knew how hard it was for me and Jeremy to keep our sermons under 45 minutes, you'd know how hard giving 2.5 minutes is to tell our story. So I just want to piggyback off of the Luke 5 passage and what Jeremy said there in, you know, finding out what it is God wants you to do. Well, what does this call to revitalization look like in your context and in your church? Because as you'll hear from all of our stories, there's a lot of similarities and themes and principles that have taken place, but the stories are very different in, you know, every little nuance too. And so for you, and you go back to your church, there's going to be different aspects of, you know, are you called to do a straight up church plant? Do you need to do revitalization within your church? Is there a merger possibility there? And in all of these, like Jeremy said, when Jesus is speaking to Peter there, he quoted it and said, "But at thy word, I will do this," right? I want to look at it from the New Living Translation because I just like the way it words it there. When Peter responds to him, he says, "But if you say so, I'll go and do this." They've come in, they're tired, they've been working, and there's nothing in their nets. And Jesus says, "Do it this way now. I want you to go into the deeper waters. I want you to throw it off a different side, whatever it might be." And Peter's response is, "But if you say so." And I just love the humanity in that, kind of the reluctance, almost the doubt of going, "I really don't want to do it this way. But if you've said to do it this way, then I'll do it. I'll step out no matter how scary, no matter how difficult, no matter what battles might be in front of us, I'm willing to do it because you said so." And that's one of the things for Hope Community Church we had to commit to from the very beginning. It was scary for a lot of the Second Baptist folks to come into this merger idea of, you know, coming in with this young contemporary church. And what does that mean for the way we dress and the style of music and the church leadership and all of these things? And it was the same thing for us, you know, moving into a, you know, an old building with a 108-year-old church. And that's not really how I would have viewed our church planting plan at the beginning. But Jeremy and I both and our leadership across the board was praying, "God, what do you want for our churches right now?" And he gives us this call that I want you to go out and throw the nets out a little differently than maybe you would have thought. And it's up to us, or are we going to respond this way? "But if you say so, I'll do it." And that's the way we started. And we're at a place now to where it would be easy for us to kind of set the cruise control and think, well, okay, we were obedient in that and we sacrificed and now we can just ride out and enjoy this. But we are praying and fighting to keep this mentality. "But if you say so," whatever the next step might be. And we're praying through different steps of faith that are even scarier, that I don't think my faith is matched up with yet. But to say, "God, we don't ever want to quit saying, but if you say so." And so that's one of the things I would hopefully encourage you in this time, you know, these couple minutes that we have, to go back and to pray and to seek and to find, "God, what are you saying? What do you want us to do? How do you want us to throw out the nets? Maybe it's different than we've ever done before." And as Nathan's going to say, maybe it's different than any of the ways that we've done. But God, if you say it, then I'll follow. If you say so, I'm willing to be obedient. And I just want to encourage you and cast this vision to look around just this room and the breakout session that we had before. And just imagine if just your churches in your area, imagine the difference in your counties and communities. If you went back and just said, "All right, we're going to pray about what God wants us to do. What's the next step and how we're going to reach people who are far from Him. And whenever we hear it, we're going to go after it with everything we have. But if you say so, I'll do it." And it says here that when the disciples did this, they were astonished at what God did. When they were obedient and they let out the nets differently and deeper, they were astonished at the response. And we've been in that place, and I know that you will be in the same place as well.
just two principles that I'd love to leave with you that I saw our church truly experience from this passage. There's two different lines. This is Simon talking. This is Simon talking both times in verse 5, and he answers, "Master, we toiled all night and took nothing." And, you know, I see that as oftentimes the details can be distracting or discouraging from the vision that God's put in our hearts. And so I would encourage you, as Simon did in this passage, and I believe as we've done as Hope Community Church, don't let the details distract you from the vision that God's given you. Because oftentimes the crosses that we bear are in the details that God's given us that it takes to pull these visions off. And so I pray that for you. And then I see the last thing that's a character trait of Simon's that I believe is why he became a disciple that Jesus loved. He says at the end, after they've caught all the fish, he says, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." And I see that humility of Peter is that same humility that we as leaders have to have so that our people will have the humility of Christ as well. Because if us as leaders don't have humility, this merger, I don't think there would have been anybody in the congregations that would have had humility. And then it would have been, hey, whose is bigger, in a sense? You know what I'm saying? And so I just encourage you to really hold on to those two principles. The first one, don't let the details discourage you or distract you from the vision that God's called for you. And then always, always, always consider others above yourself. And that's not an excuse for passivity, but it's the heart of everything that we do. We have to be humble in every message that we deliver.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Devon Barnum, and I'm the pastor of Tar Heel Baptist Church in Tar Heel, North Carolina. On a recent podcast of Revitalize and Replant, the host said something along the lines of, "Planting a church is like landing on the beaches of Normandy, but replanting or revitalizing a church is like the dude who parachutes in behind enemy lines the night before D-Day." Revitalizing and planting churches is not for the faint of heart. If I'm honest with you, it's probably one of the hardest things I've ever done in my entire life. However, if I could leave you with one thing today, it would be this: Jesus Christ is just worth following. See, Tar Heel, North Carolina is in a small town. The population of Tar Heel is 110 people. The population of the zip code is only 143 individuals. We have one stoplight, and the highlight of our town last year was getting a Dollar General and a Hardee's. And the reason we got the Dollar General and the Hardee's was because Smithfield Packing Plant, the largest in the world, is right outside of Tar Heel, North Carolina. Tar Heel, North Carolina is not only a small town, it's a dying town. We're expected to lose around 35 people in the next 20 years. That may not sound like a lot to you, but when the population's 110, that's a pretty big deal. However, in this small town that is dying, the God of the universe has decided to draw his people to himself. We as a body of believers at Tar Heel Baptist Church have been transformed by the gospel of Jesus Christ. And because of that transformation, we have decided that Jesus Christ is worth following no matter what. And as Jesus has led us to engage our community, to engage our town, to engage our county, and to engage the people we live life with, a woman in our church decided that Jesus Christ was worth following. So she decided to start a Bible study based off Titus chapter 2, bringing older women and younger women together to grow in their love for each other and to grow in their love for Christ. Another woman in our church decided that Jesus Christ was worth following. So while her child was taking dance classes, she started a Bible study out in the lobby. A man in our church decided that Jesus Christ was worth following. So he holds a monthly prayer breakfast that reaches across racial lines and has even invited county officials, including the sheriff and town managers, so they can hear the gospel and pray with us. Another man in our church decided that Jesus Christ was worth following. So he started a Bible study every other week at IHOP, for the very purpose of teaching men what it means to be godly dads, even having some lost guys show up. Just this past week, he sent me a text saying, "Pastor, pray for me and pray for one of these dads who is lost. He is on the verge of coming to Jesus Christ." Sunday school classes have decided that Jesus Christ is worth following, and they've become the hands and feet of Jesus in our community. Our young professionals class has teamed up with a drug rehab center in our county where they go once a month and preach the gospel and declare the gospel, and they've seen drug addicts get free of drugs and come to Christ and actually have started coming to our church. We have seen another Sunday school class partner with the local schools in our county. They've reached out. They have provided Chick-fil-A lunch for the teachers there. They have showed up and cleaned a common area, provided a picnic table so teachers could have somewhere to go on a nice day. They've even provided utensils or things that teachers may need that they could not afford to buy themselves. Now, in our small town, we don't have professional firefighters and professional people who are policemen and stuff, so we have volunteers. We have a volunteer fire department and volunteer rescue squad. One of our Sunday school classes wanted to be the hands and feet of Jesus, so on 9/11, they decided to have a banquet for all the volunteers in our community, first responders, and just share the love of Christ with them. Our senior adults have got in on this as well. Our senior adult ladies Sunday school class has decided to be the hands and feet of Jesus and reach out to the shut-ins in our community, church members and non-church members. It has gotten to the point where I will go visit a shut-in in our church and ask at the end of my visit, is there anything that the church can help you with? And they always respond at this point, no, Pastor. Those senior ladies have met every need we could possibly have at this point. Our long-range planning committee has decided to be the hands and feet of Jesus Christ. With the help of Lonnie Reynolds, we are looking at starting in-home groups that will one day become church plants across our county and in the counties around us. Because of the gospel and its work in our lives, our church seeing that Jesus Christ is worth following, we as a church have had to give up some things as well. We've had to give up people, and we've had to give up traditions. What do you mean? Well, 3 months ago, we sent off our part-time youth pastor to a church across the state so that he could help revitalize that church. Before that, we sent off another couple that went 20 minutes up the road to start and help another church revitalize. 2 weeks ago, we just sent off one of our young people so she could go to another church and lead music in this church. It has cost us in sending people out. We've also had to give up traditions. We have followed Jesus' direction and changed our worship service from an inward-focused worship service to an outward focus, or a worship service based on God. For what do you mean? Well, when I first showed up at Tar Heel, many, like some of your churches, we did 15 minutes of announcements. Anything from the floor, even Girl Scout cookies or to community events, were announced. We did two hymns, only two stanzas, and then the pastor was allowed to preach 20 to 25 minutes, but he better not go over 30 minutes. Why? Because everybody had to beat the Presbyterians and the Methodists to the buffet lines. We also had other things going on, but today I can report to you that we have a gospel center worship service. From the music to the preaching, going as long as it takes to win people to Jesus Christ, and the best part is we no longer do announcements at all in our worship service. In our worship service, there is now an audience of one, and his name is Jesus Christ. We have followed Jesus Christ also in the gospel by giving up traditional homecoming services, Christmas services, and Easter schedules to make it more evangelistic. For instance, just this past Sunday, we canceled our fall festival and combined it with our homecoming and did it all at one time. We reached out and paid for Facebook advertisement and social media advertisement and reached 18,000 people and invited them to our church. To give you a perspective, there's only 35,000 people in our entire county. So we reached half of our county with telling them about our homecoming service. This past Sunday, we had 300 individuals show up, and we did an outdoor service with outdoor baptismal service at the same time. The best part was not the 300 people showing up. The best part was the first time guests who showed up and 12 of them giving their lives to Jesus Christ this past Sunday. That is not bad for a town of 110 people with one stoplight. I didn't come to give you a blueprint today on how to revitalize your church. I came today to encourage you to follow Jesus Christ and let Him lead revitalizing your church. See, I don't know what you've been called to do in your church. I don't know what you've been called to do in your town. I don't know what you've been called to do in your county or your community. I do know this: Jesus Christ is worth following. And if your church, no matter how small, no matter how big, no matter if your town is growing or if your town is dying, if you will follow Jesus Christ, then you will be drawn to Him and you'll be on mission for Him. And as the pastor of Tar Heel Baptist Church, that's what I want for my people, that they will be drawn closer to Jesus Christ, love Him more, and be on mission for Him.
Man, so good. I had the opportunity to hear their stories, both churches, for the past few months as we prepared for this. So if you get a chance, talk to them afterwards. Go buy them a cup of coffee, handshake, hug, $100 bill, whatever you can do for them. So I thought it was cool how Skip set it up. There's this vision that you need from God for revitalization. Has God really called you to this? And then bathing that in prayer. And then from Devon, man, are you willing to weigh the cost? Like, what is it going to cost you? Is Jesus enough? Is he worth it? And so now what? It's kind of where my story comes in. Where do you start if you know those two things? Unfortunately, the starting point for revitalization today is all built around death. If you Google revitalization, here's what you'll find. Autopsy of a dead church. How to tell if your church is plateaued or declining. How do you know if you're getting ready to shut the doors? Are you a member of one of these churches that is falling apart? Here's the only problem with that. Death is not a very good motivator. If you wake up every morning and say, my goal for the day is just not to die, nobody gets inspired by that. Nobody gets fired up and say, hey, so we got pastors that are leading the charge in churches, and they're starting with trying to convince their people that they're dead. And you know what's going to happen? Your people will look at you as their pastor and say, I'll tell you what, pastor, we'll figure out who gets to stay here longer. We'll find out if you die before we do. When you tell your people that they're dead and dying, they'll dig their heels in and they'll prove to you that you're going to die first. And the next 2 or 3 years of your ministry career will be awful. And they will chew you up and spit you out and you will move on. Here's the thing, death is not a very good motivator. What if, instead of trying to convince our churches that they were dead and dying, what if we came out with a vision for what the future could be? Everybody right now is looking at churches and telling it like it is. What if you stepped in and instead of telling it like it is, you told it how it could be? What would it look like for us to be effective again? Death is obvious. They look around the room and they know that there's only 15 or 20 people in the auditorium. They don't need for you to tell them that. They look up at the baptistry and realize it hasn't been filled in years. They don't need for you to tell them that things are bad. They know how much money they have and that it's going down. They don't need someone to say, there's a book of autopsy of a dead church and we are 11 out of the 10 things listed. Guys, come on, wake up. They need somebody to come in there and say, what is it going to take for us to be effective again? Like, what would it take? Can we be better together? Maybe, like our story, partnering with a church plan or partnering with another organization. What would it take for this auditorium to be filled? What would it take for us to see hundreds of kids running downstairs again? Chances are you may have been in a church that one time had a bunch of people, had a bunch of kids. You were the life of the party. Like, you guys were dominating the city, but things have changed. So how do we get back to that? How can we cast a compelling vision for life instead of beating people over the head and trying to convince them that they're dead? When we partner with two different churches in our area to do this revitalization process, and I'll admit, Revo was not the first church that either one of these churches was approached by. But here was the difference. Other churches came in and said, you're dead. You can't do it anymore. You're too old. You don't understand culture. You're too disconnected. You just need to give us this building. And you know what they said? See ya. Our team walked in and said, what would it look like if we could build on your legacy? What would it look like if we could partner together? What would it look like for us to use your experience, your wisdom, your blood, sweat, and tears that have built this congregation and had a presence in the community for years? What would it look like if a group of young adults came in and put some energy and some passion and some zeal behind that? Could we be better together? And in both instances, they got behind that. They weren't looking for somebody to tell them that they had failed. They were looking for somebody to tell them, this is what it could be. This is what we could do together. Like, forget looking in the rearview mirror. Let's look out the windshield. And so we've seen that. And I really do believe that the best is yet to come for people that are willing to look and ask themselves, instead of, are we dying, is how can we be effective again? How can we be more effective with the mission that God has entrusted us with? Because here's the thing, this is what gets me most excited. Right now, revitalization is only for a very, very small percentage of churches. Because a very small percentage of churches are on the brink of death in the next 6 months. But if we began to cast a vision of revitalization as how can we be more effective, then 100% of churches in your city are candidates for revitalization. even churches that have grown year over year over year, there are ways that we can get better. And so now, instead of a stigma of revitalization is only for the dead, only for the dying, throw in the towel, you totally blew it, every single pastor at every single church asks, how can I be more effective? What part of my church needs to be revitalized? And I need to do some revitalization as well. So if it's praying and asking God, what does it look like for you? Weighing the cost or saying, is it effective? The thing about revitalization that I'm most excited about is this. I believe there are ways that God wants to revitalize churches that no one's ever thought of yet. Don't just take our story and try to go and implement it in your hometown. Maybe God wants to do something in you and through you that no one has ever seen before. And next year, I want to come and hear your story. I want to come and hear what God has done through you and learn something new as a part of the revitalization process. So I believe that. I believe that if we can do those things together, then we can be better. And your best days will be ahead of you. So thank you.
Thanks, Nathan. Thank you, guys. Okay, very quickly, and then I want to give you time to ask some questions because there may be some that are on your hearts and your minds. What are some common characteristics or elements that you hear in these stories? They're all different stories, but what are some things that you hear?
Zeal.
Zeal. Zeal. What else?
Seeking the Lord.
The Lord. Seeking the Lord. These, I can tell you, in every case here, and these guys were really trying to abide by their time, and I really appreciate that. Undergirded by prayer, and I like to call it an aspect of the supernatural spirit. There's always some element of the supernatural or spiritual in every one of these stories. How God has miraculously intervened. What else?
Humility.
Others. What about people are getting saved and coming to Jesus? That's a God thing, isn't it? These guys can't make that happen. That's a God thing. Now, they can engage their communities. They can engage people in spiritual conversations and share Christ. But people are being saved and being baptized. What else?
Willing to change.
Willing to change. Again, back on the side of sending out people. I mean, here's a church, 110 people in your town. Devon's story at Tar Heel. We're releasing people. And I think... That is supposed to be turned off. That was your timer. You did good. So it's on silent. Why did it ring? Anyway. So anyway, this aspect of, I think, another sign of the healthy church is they're willing to send their people. They're willing to release their people to minister in other areas. And I think that's true of all these stories here. And you see members who are serving their community. I mean, just time after time, you're hearing examples of how the members are out engaging their community in all different kinds of ways, according to the way God's made them and God has gifted them. And I think this one's one I didn't say in the last session, but it becomes more a matter of not just hearing the Word, but beginning to live the Word of God. And I like the term gospel-centered. I mean, they talked about, I don't know if any of them actually use it or not, but when we become a gospel-focused church, where we're focusing in on Jesus and asking the question, what would Jesus have us to do? Or what is it that we need to do or be in order to be the bride of Christ that would make the groom happy, that would please the groom, who's Jesus himself? Questions. Let's hear them. By the way, Jenna, she's agreed to help me. We forgot to put an evaluation in your chair, and we'd love to have your feedback to help us know how to do this next time. So, question. These guys are up here. You ask the question, and we'll try to answer it best we can. Yes, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. We'll get you right next.
The idea of vision is great, and you know, I've tried to present vision to the church. But how do you get a church who is, you know, I guess I've heard from you that have had this tradition 50, 60, 70 years and said, you know, we've done it this way for this long. We're not changing. We're not going. And I like your, you know, the what you were saying there is having that vision of what it could be. But I'm not seeing any breakthrough in that. So you got some ideas of what, where can you go from there?
Devon, tell them what your vision was in terms of your county. When we came down and talked, tell them your vision. You talked to your people. Yeah. You had a vision about.
Our vision in Tar Heel is we have 110. Population of Bladen County is 35,000. 20,000 don't go to church anywhere on typical Sunday. We're at the northern end of the county. So Lumberton is a big city, 25 minutes away. And then Fayetteville is 40 minutes away.
How many unchurched people in your county?
Around 20,000 in our county.
22,000.
Yeah, and if you consider those other counties, around 100,000 people. And so I just presented my people, let's just go after 100,000. But the way I sold that vision was, in a small church, you have certain people who are the key leaders, even sometimes when the pastor is not the key leader. I brought those key leaders in very early and got them on board. And when they got on board, I didn't have to sell it to the church. They stood before the church and they sold it to the church. When Lonnie Reynolds come down, he met with my guy. Mm. And I said, you need to meet this guy, and got him on board with Lonnie before we ever went before anybody else.
Now, this was a guy, when we say the guy, this is a guy who has a major role in the church.
He's been chairman of deacons the last 40 years, except he rotates off once every 3 years.
And the wisdom was here in bringing this fellow into the vision. The wisdom is in Devon's side of this equation, was bringing him into that vision, having conversations with him long before it ever came to a committee. And we actually, the three of us even met before we met with your committee. I didn't know what that was all about, but he just wanted to make sure that he was bringing him in. It was part of the conversation. Anybody else want to speak to that? Does that pretty much help you, brother, a little bit?
Well, that's, I tried that. That's where the resistance is, the leaders. We get buy-in from the non-leaders, but it's the leaders that are, that's the resistant group I've got.
Yeah.
So I've been focusing more on the non-leaders now and trying to get them more excited.
Yeah.
So, but
maybe that's a conversation that we could have with either one of these guys afterwards, or we could have a conversation, because I think we'd have to unpack some more stuff to really maybe to get into that. Does that make sense? Are you good with that? Somebody else.
I like what. Just to mention that, Rick Warren once said, love everyone, but move with the movers.
Yep.
And so if there's people that won't get on board, but people that will, then move with them. And the thing that the people that are off board may need to see is some results that are produced by the people that are on board. So if some people don't want to run with you, then hug them, love them, and move with the movers. And maybe once they see how God uses your vision through those people that are willing to say yes, maybe they'll come on board. So I wouldn't wait for more people to get on, like dance with one person if they want to dance with you.
And the other thing I'd say is this, sometimes it's easier, instead of digging up a stump, go around the stump. And so there's certain things where my chairman of deacons has said no to. I laid it to the side for a while and went to another area and started working in that area. And then we come back later to that.
This can be a very painful process. Jeremy, one of you guys might want to speak to that as well.
Yeah, and I would say this, you're going to meet resistance. I mean, that's the part of being what we do. I mean, you're going to meet resistance. But if God said do it, the resistance is not a factor to me. I know I'm going to get somebody to say, I don't really like that. Well, God said do it, and it's going to happen. And, I would love for you to be the one dancing with me when you see this. I would really love that. But that doesn't deter the fact that he has said do this, and we're going to do that. So just, keeping that focus, is this is what he said do. Reach lost people. I don't care how you do it. You can cast out 1,000 different ways you want to do it. But he said we're going to do this, and you're going to meet that. You're going to meet that. But fight through it. It's a fight. This is a fight. It's a lot of times.
And that's not just theory. Jeremy lived this. Like in our story, it looks great, and it was everything worked out. But when you really know the details, we had this miraculous encounter. If you read our story, and I don't know if it's in there, we can share it more. Just the way each of us were praying for God to show us what He wanted us to do, and the way He answered that prayer, and then we move forward, and we're trying to go by all the constitutions and bylaws from the Second Baptist side to get this thing voted through and approved so we can move forward. And the first vote failed. It was a 2/3 vote, and there were 5 or 6 people, like most churches have, that were against it, that wanted to play a power war, and they called in their cousins and aunts and grandparents and everybody from different towns to come in and vote. They were still on the roll, but hadn't been in that church in decades. And then the movers who were along with it after the vote said, no, we're not putting up with this. You know, it's not going to be the tyranny of the minority anymore. And they had another meeting that night. They rescinded the vote and said, we're moving forward with this because God said it. And so it's, I think, a little bit of all this, getting those ones that are on board and getting that and momentum behind.
I encountered something similar to that. We've been growing. And about 6 months ago, we decided we were going to go to two services. And I decided we needed 75%. We voted, and I didn't get 75% in the first time. And so I called for a week of prayer. And we prayed, and we voted the second time on a Sunday morning. I called for another vote, and we got the 75%, only to 6 months later stand before them and say, we're not going to this. We're going in another direction. But, I mean, I face resistance as well. I mean, that's just, honestly, if you're going to revitalize a church, you're going to face resistance.
And every, I will say that every time, every meeting we had before I walked in, I mean, and I'm sure that we all would pray, but I mean, just praying. And my specific prayer was, God, grant me a gracious tongue. And when we had the conversations out in front with everybody, I would always say, guys, we're going to love each other. I expect passionate debate. I expect argument over this, but we're going to love each other. And if I hear anything that is not love for one another, I'm going to ask you to leave and I'll remove you. And we had to do that. We had to do that. But and you just again, you gotta, you know, if God said do it, it's gonna be. I mean, I've never seen a person in the Bible that didn't face it. Yeah. And man, there's glory on the other side, bro. There's glory on the other side of it.
And don't get discouraged because, well, I just put it this way: I went through a merger situation that ended up not happening, and so I had some people from the other church that were just so disappointed because we only had 74.7% instead of 75% for it. Mm. So, anyway, what happened was this. I had some people come by from the other church and said, well, Pastor, we're so sorry. It must not have been God's will. Well, let me just add this. Matter of fact, I'm preaching a series right now. Joshua and Caleb, it was God's will for them to go in the promised land with that original group that came out who witnessed all the miraculous hands of God getting them out of Egyptian bondage. Mm. But in their rebellion and faithlessness, they didn't get to go into the land. Mm. But the next generation did. But there were some, Joshua and Caleb, they got to go in. Mm. They got to go in. And so I want to encourage you, if it doesn't work out, don't give up on it. Mm. Matter of fact, after this failed, like 3 years later, I said, let's do a vacation Bible school. We went in together. Oh, my goodness. We had 500 and some people the first time. The next year we did it, we had over 600. The next year, over 700. Now, we still didn't merge, but we came together because it's better together.
There you go.
And so not to discourage, but sometimes it doesn't go through. But that doesn't mean it's over.
Yeah.
They did get to go to the promised land. Yeah. Just took 45 years later.
Yeah. Personal privilege here at one of our conversations, Lon here introduced me to a pastor in his association. They've done a great job at bringing unity among the pastors. So they have a united testimony. They're not after getting people to come to their church. They're just after getting people to come to Jesus. And I think that's a great starting point for this. When you begin to develop an ethos and a culture of, we're not in this for us, we're not trying to fill our seats, we're trying to get people to Jesus, to the feet of Jesus. Community sees something it doesn't see very often. That's the body of Christ loving each other and working together. Other questions? Yes, sir.
How do you get a church that's... my church is very financially secure, but they still operate the budgets as if they're in survival mode, even though our expenditures this year have been $110,000. We've brought in almost $120,000. So and that's with $20,000 of renovations that, you know, were unbudgeted and aren't regular expenses. So we're doing good financially, but they just won't spend any money. How do you change that mindset?
Anybody want to address that?
Yes. I can, because we've done it at Tar Heel. Tar Heel, before I got there, there's a long story we didn't put in there. It was not be the church most of you would sign up to go serve at. And they were in financial crisis. They were tight on the penny. And we've gone from $200,000 to $250,000 budget in 2 years, undesignated gifts coming in. And what I did was when I cast the vision of where we were going, I went and met with our finance committee because we still have a finance committee. And I said, I want the finances of the church to match the vision of the church. And so I went there, and they are we're still in the process of looking at what that looks like. What it, our slogan at Tar Heel is connect, grow, share. That's how we make disciples, and we want our budget to match that.
Mm. It's a very good word, and that's the power of a vision, because then you can begin to evaluate everything you do and everything you spend in light of that envision. Is it going to get us closer? Is it going to take us where we're going to? Is that helpful? Somebody else, another question or two. Yes, ma'am.
If and when a church decides to go through a merger and they get it all approved and all, is there legal advice or help for churches going through this, through the state convention?
That's a great question. I'm going to let Jeff answer because he answered it in the last session. Did a great job with it.
Yes, there certainly is. So there's a Baptist State Convention works with some lawyers closely here in Greensboro, and I got to have an hour conversation with the lawyer who is a part of the association, and then they bill the association, so you don't even get the bill. But I think that's very important because there are things that you just don't think through. There's so many constitution and bylaws. There's so many, for example, our church now is Second Baptist doing business as Hope Community Church. So we didn't go through the changes of a new tax ID. We didn't have to start an entirely new nonprofit. We just continued with the old Second Baptist, and we're doing business as Hope Community Church. So there are resources there, and then I talked to a local lawyer several times as well. So it's... Yes, I definitely advise seeking counsel with it.
That help? Someone else have a question? We have time for maybe one more or two. Yes, Tom.
All of you have very positive stories. Can each of you all say, I can point to particular specific things that we had to sacrifice to get to the point we are now? We had to lose something to be able to move to the positive. I don't, we don't have time to list those things, but can you can think back through this time period. We lost something, or somebody lost something, to get to where we are.
Time. For us, a merger is going to be long. It'd be quicker for you to go birth a church. It'd be quicker for us to go and build our own building. And we'd have it the way we wanted it. But our team was willing to say, are we willing to take the time to walk through these with these existing churches to earn their trust, to give them the opportunity to answer as many questions as possible. And our first merger took us 12 months. Our next one took us about 8 months, the entire process. And like I said, there were times where I walked away from those business meetings where I said, man, we're going to build a building right next door to theirs. Like, I'm tired of them asking the same questions over and over and telling us that we're crazy. But that was what our team said. We're willing to sacrifice time and shortcuts in order to do something this way.
At Tar Heel had to give up their will, and Devon had to give up his will for the sake of God's will. There's certain aspects of Tar Heel I wish we were doing completely different than what we're doing right now. And there's people that have been there that were founding members that were wishing that there were things we were doing completely different. And guess what? They're not the same. And so the thing we've had to sacrifice is we've had to give up our will. And the reason we've given up our will, it just comes back to every Sunday. I keep coming back to the gospel and saying what we have in common in the gospel is more important than the differences we have and what we want. And so engaging our community has come out of that. And being patient. You don't walk into a church that's dying and revitalize it from within overnight. We're just in the beginning stages of this.
I do want to piggyback on that last statement. I totally agree with it. But we don't have to think it takes 10 years either. You've been there how long?
2.5.
2.5 years. So we're not the ones to put that on God as to what his time frame looks like.
And Lonnie, I think we can go on the same lines. From the day Jeremy and I spoke for the very first time to our first service as Hope Community Church, ours was 5 months.
Five months.
I mean, that's a lot of time, but still, it's reasonable. Then the sacrifices, since we have the two different sides coming together, you've got Second Baptist, which was the 108-year-old Southern Baptist Church, and there were people in it that were 95 years old, and this was the only church they'd ever known. The only facility, the only worship style, the same pew that she sat in every single Sunday. I mean, you know these things. But she was one of the ones that was willing to say, I'm willing to sacrifice and give this up if it's going to reach more people and it's going to reach the next generation after I'm gone. From the Element side, we had been there for 4 years. We were, you know, young and growing. We did a lot of community outreach. We had, you know, a good community relationship and a brand, if you will. And, you know, people hear brand and they think logo or colors, but brand is really the perception that people have when your organization comes to their mind. And so for Element, we had a great brand in our community of a good perception that these people, you know, are out focused and are reaching. And so when we were coming together, that's one of the reasons we said we are becoming Hope Community Church. You guys are sacrificing stuff and we are sacrificing stuff to create this new identity. We are a brand new church that wants to reach this community. So yeah, there were sacrifices on both sides for us.
Right. Thank you for answering.
And as far as sacrifice, I would say self.
Yeah.
Self. And it goes along with that. But for, I mean, we may be in here thinking about the sacrifices of our congregations. And I would ask you to not think of that. I would ask you to think about the sacrifice that you're going to have to make. Okay. As a pastor. Because, you know, I mean, some of the stuff in our story didn't, you know, we didn't say a lot of it. But at Second Baptist, we had grown from 30 to 80. We had baptized 30 people in a year. And I'm thinking God's doing what He's supposed to do. We're growing a church here. And then when He put the brakes on that, you know, and all of my thinking of you know, what this is going to look like stopped for this. And I had to say, okay, I don't care if I ever preach another day here or not. If I never set foot in this pulpit, it doesn't matter. If God said that, Jeff said something early on in the merger that I really thought was profound. He said, I'm trying to figure out what is my personal preference and what is conviction. What is me just being me, and what is it that God is really saying here? And that self is huge. Everybody has to do it, but it's mostly for us. Are you willing to say, if I don't preach another Sunday, if I don't get another check, God said it, we're doing it. So self's got to die.
Thank you all for being here. I'm going to ask Sandy Marks, who's in the back. He's one of our consultants. He works in area revitalization. If Sandy would pray for us, we thank God for the God stories. I know there are a lot of other God stories out there. We can't wait to hear them. As Nathan said, you know, next year this time we'll be hearing more, we hope. Sandy, would you lead us in prayer that God would just be gracious? And
Lord, we are grateful.